Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to In the Know with Mo. I'm your host, Maureen Forte. Today I have a super special, fantastic show. I have two outstanding guests. I have with me Xavier Hargrove and also Rhonda B. Woods. And who qualifies for IEP plan is the title. My guests, Xavier Hargrove and Rhonda B. Woods, are both someone you should know. They both have an interest in educational information on what an IEP plan is. Rhonda B. Woods is an educator for many years, and Xavier is a labor with an IEP. So I want to welcome them both to In the Know with Mo. Welcome, Xavier, and welcome, Rhonda B. You're both live on the line.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Ms. Forte.
Good morning. Afternoon.
Well, good afternoon. You know what? Who qualifies for an IEP plan? So Rhonda and I have been friends, educational, social, whatever, friends forever. Rhonda had stated during one of the conversations, learning differently is not a disability. And so I met Xavier on set. He's my PA. And so I want to open the door for you first, Xavier, to give the people a little background about who you are and what you've experienced.
All right. Well, my name is Xavier Hargrove. I am 27 years old, and I was labeled with the IEP since I was in grade school. Ever since I started school, I was labeled with a disability called prostatic deficit. It's pretty much like it was hard for me to understand rhythms and sounds of people's voices, like sarcasm or like disabilities or anything like that. I mean, not disabilities, excuse me, like rhythms and like how to, like, if it's like ends with a question mark, I had to raise my pitch of a voice. I was like, making it sound like a question. But before we go deep and thorough with that, I've been doing acting, well, I would say I was in fine arts ever since grade school as well. Like, I was a set designer before I started doing acting. And with that, I do with impersonations. I have this voice that you guys are listening to since I was in fifth grade, believe it or not. And I just pretty much make people, like, feel welcome because the teachers and the people I surround myself with, like my friends, my family, and my loved ones and everything like that, treated me like that. And it's like an old saying, treat others like you want to be treated. And that's what I've always bookmarked in my head to share that awareness with people out there in the world.
Okay. Rhonda B., give us a little background about you.
Well, you know, the background by me, you know, like you said, I'm just an educator, motivator, an all-around inspirator. So I have an affliction about the students with the individual educational learning plans because the fact that it's called the disability for a lack of a better term. But because of that, there's a stigma associated with it that should not be associated because to have an IEP is actually a right. It's not a disability. It's not something to be ashamed of. And parents, because they don't know the rights of their young people, and their young people need the parent to advocate for them. Because an IEP is a federal protection. There's no difference between mm-hmm. having an IEP than being born black or Indian or anything that's not part of what's considered to be the larger part of society. And then what happens because people don't understand, the IEP just says that this individual learns differently. It does not mean that the person can't learn at all or that there's something wrong with that individual. But because everybody's grouped together, then they treat the student with an IEP as if they have a disability or a difficulty learning when it's not. It's a style. We all have different learning styles. And traditionally, the system was only burdened with teaching to the style that's considered the norm. And so over the years, they discovered that different kids learn differently. And if people adapt and help them understand how they learn, then that's perfectly fine as adults. But because, you know, then once the system came out and then we end up with the stigma, like, okay, this is some kind of disability, then parents do not fight for their kids to have the right to have their IEP because they don't want, especially our black boys, they don't want them to be labeled when it's just the opposite. If your child is struggling in school in any fashion, you need to just assume that your child can learn, because everybody can learn, and that he can't learn according to parents mm-hmm. getting gear to go make the system work for their child. But the way life is now, you try to make the child adapt to the system, and that's the part that's not fair.
Now, how can parents, you know, because it seems like some of these students, and I'm a retired bilingual educator, and it seems like some of the students have had an IEP from third grade all the way till they graduate from high school. Do they have it? Do they have that IEP forever? Xavier, did you have an IEP till you graduated from high school?
I had an IEP, like, I believe I was never in, like, what's it called, high honors or anything like that, like the high honor classes or anything. But I was in the same classrooms of some of the students. Like, some classes I've had it with the other students, or some classes I had it with the special ed classes. But, like, when the teachers, like, when I was in elementary school, I was all, like, I had some classes, like, most of my classes in elementary school when my IEP was developed or my disability was developed, I was in there for at least a good 10 minutes, and after that, the teacher comes by and picks me up and go to a separate room, and we started learning the same thing, but in a much easier form. But when it went to mm-hmm. middle school, some of it happened, but not as much. But when it hit to high school, it's the same thing that happened in middle school, you know, like I learned a lot. I pretty much learned the knowledge and also the patience that the teacher gave me, and applied it with the things I've learned in the past to when I was in high school. And when I was in high school to learn a lot, it's just like who I surrounded with myself. And plus, I was trusting the teachers, because the teachers in the past pretty much like helped me feel confident in who I am and what I've done. Because with my disability, I overthinked myself to the point that I like panic and frantic about like certain little things that I tend to like. I overwork myself. Like, I know the, like, if I'm not pressured, I know it. But if I am pressured, like a test or anything like that, it just goes in one ear and out the other. So like pretty much throughout high school and throughout college, I had it, and it was there and everything like that. But I still, like, when I take a test in college or I take a test in high school, I say I have an IEP, and they say, okay, where's your requirements? Like, do you need a calculator? Do you need someone to read your read a sentence for you. Sometimes when I read it over too much to the point that's when I overwork myself. But when I was in college and I'm in my own room and I read it and take my time and read it out loud, or if I'm having a math problem, I am required to have a calculator, because how my brain works is that if I do a calculation like a Pythagorean theorem, like I know how to do the Pythagorean theorem, but if I first learned it and I try to, like, if I overthink it, instead of saying a squared plus b squared equals c squared, I'll be like c squared plus a squared plus b squared. I'll over jumble it because I'm overthinking myself, because it's a time crunch. And when I think of the time crunch, that makes me feel like I'm being pressured to be done. And also seeing the students get up and they finish the quiz faster, I want to be faster like them to beat it. And when I do that, I tend to fail, or I end up overworking myself to the point that I don't want to do it anymore.
Okay. But, Rhonda, as an advocate for the students that you teach, how often are those IEB plans adjusted?
No. See, that part, the system follows all of that part. That's the good part. Like mm-hmm. he's just explaining his learning style. Is exactly the reason why it's in place. It's why it's called the. And then what happened is, because of the fact of the way he learned, the purpose of the IEP is to explain to all of the educators, everybody who's teaching him, how he learned. That's the good part. So whatever schools he were at and whoever he was working with, they actually did the system the way it's designed. The question,
shout out to Ms. Smith.
The question and the challenge is the kids who do not get exactly what he just described. Because the way he, the purpose of it, figure out how they learn. That's what they did with him. Once they understand how they learn, the purpose of the IEP is to now put it in writing so anyone else who has the beauty of teaching him also understands how he learns, and they could teach him according to how he learns so that he could be successful, so that he can understand that he could be successful. So they did it correctly in his case. My issue and my challenge is every kid does not get what he has gotten. So like he said, he could do Pythagorean theorem. He understood what the teachers told him, but he couldn't do it without a calculator. So whenever the test comes, then he's always entitled to the calculator, period. Whether the state test, any kind of test, because his IEP gave him that right.
Challenge
in life, and the challenge of the school system, is now the question to him is, was his parents aware, or was the school just first of all, initiated the fact that he needed the support, and then who helped to help it be enforced throughout his school year? Because what he experienced is a good thing. That's why he's a successful young man right now today.
Thank you.
Good question. Good question, Xavier. Who noticed that you needed assistance, you know, needed an IEP plan? Was it your teachers or was it your parents?
I believe it was a mixture of both, because how my parents and my teachers brought about is that when I started school, I was not lacking, but like when they started, like, you know, like how some classes, like, you have to read out loud and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I had hooked on phonics, so I was always, like, every summer before school started, I was always on that, you know. That's how I learned how to read and speak properly and everything like that. So my parents saw that, and I started practicing with that, and I still remember it to this day, and we still have the books to this day, sadly, but we still pass it along. But I think when it was summertime, close to it, because my birthday is in summer. My birthday is August 10th, and the 27th is my younger brother's birthday, so he's a year younger than me. So when school year started, we pretty much started school the same year, but I was a year above him.
Mm-hmm.
So when he learned faster, I believe on Hooked on Phonics, and I was a little laid back. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on this, but I think on parents and my mom mainly, she brought it to my school's attention of the school I went to, and brought it to my teacher's attention, saying, "Hey, so we already did this for hookup phonics for him, and he's a little slow on it, but he knows how, what he's doing. Just help him out, make him feel welcomed, and do this, that, the other." And when that pretty much happened, obviously it was behind closed doors, but other than that, like, my parents mainly took the time to help me out so I'm not slow or anything like that, like the other students or anything. But, like, when they, the individual contact with the teacher and everything like that, that pretty much made me think, like, it's like a parent right next to me helping me and taking their time to become who I become who I want to be and everything like that. And that's where I am now, you know. And I share that awareness with everyone and with the teachers and the people that are looking at me as a role model. I see the teachers and the future students and the kids and everything as a role model, because if I give them knowledge of the things I've done in, like, in the past, and hopefully pass it along in the long run, it will be a better place. But I'm only one person, and
that's right.
Hopefully, it'll go from
takes
there.
One person. It only takes one person. Now, here's
and that's
situation.
What my teachers did too.
Here's a situation that happened to me, which I almost got fired. I was almost given whatever they wanted to do with the teachers. They wanted to write up. I had all Mexican Spanish speaking students. And of course, if they couldn't recite a nursery rhyme or whatever, they didn't have the language, they were automatically given an IEP, which I always thought was wrong, because it was a language issue. It wasn't a learning disability issue as far as I was concerned. And like Xavier had said, mentioned before, that they would come into, he would be in that classroom for 10 minutes and somebody would come and take them out of the classroom and take them to another room. Well, I had two students like that. They would come in, do the breakfast, and after the pledge, they were taken out. Well, it turned out they were taken out to another room, but it was only those two that were taken out. So I decided upon myself to keep those students in my class and ask for that advocate to stay in the class with the students. That way I fought that exclusion with inclusion, because now I don't want them to feel like they were different. You know, because when they're going out, people say, oh, they're different. But they weren't different. They were learning differently, but having the advocate in the classroom with them, and they could still see the classmate. You see what I'm saying? My personal life just shit a brick on that. You know, but the bottom line is, as soon as she had an understanding, the students felt better, and we achieved much greater when they stayed inside the classroom. Is that a right thing to do or a wrong thing to do?
Okay. So
it worked
back
for me.
Okay, let me first again, compliment your guest, because you are a shining star, and as much as you can speak on this, please do. Because you are exactly, your experience is exactly how the system is designed to work. Because what they did is help you bridge the gap between and learning like your peers and learning the way you learn, so that you could be a successful adult. Because it's not about those school years, because you're going to leave that, but you're going to always be an adult. So I applaud your mom. I applaud the whole system for doing for you what the system is designed to do. Now, back to your situation, Maureen. When originally at one point it was that you would take the kids out of the classroom because the teacher who, you know, that second teacher, that co-teacher is going to break the assignment down. You know, they were going to have to be talking, so they didn't want to disturb the other teachers in the other class. But then what happens when Bush came along and did the No Child Left Behind. See, everybody was glad when Obama ended No Child Left Behind, but no, there were some benefits to No Child Left Behind that our children need. So when No Child Left Behind came, it came in it, because you got to realize you're teaching that entire child. So
that's
some
right,
children
that's right.
do need to be removed from the classroom, but that's not 100% across the board. So those are reports I can't stress enough. It's individualized. So that kid who can learn inside of that classroom, then they were giving parasupport, which is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
They were given a support team to work with them in the classroom with the teacher. That works ideally for those kids with that learning curve. And then the other kids who may be a little bit lower functioning, then they also had the option and the support of being pulled out the classroom. So both, see, there is no one size fit all. All of it needs to be on the table, and it needs to be individualized to the individual child.
Exactly, and that's what the IEP is, individualized educational plan. And then they take it and make it a cookie cutter,
and it's not a cookie cutter. And across the board, it works okay. Most things work okay. It's the individuals where it don't. See, this young man, it's the way he's out, it worked perfectly, and you know from the results because he turned out to be a successful adult. But other kids, because they don't have the right support and they get stigmatized, then they become a behavior problem. Because like in your case, you ask for that support to come in the classroom. Other teachers or other schools or keep that kid in the room without the support.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, that kid, you speak German and he understands Spanish.
So you know,
being an educator, if you're not talking to that individual kid, then he does things to fill that time and fill that void, and then it becomes a behavior problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have a caller here. Let's take this caller. Caller, you're live on the line with Xavier and Rhonda. Hello?
Can you hear me? Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Taylor, journalist and autism advocate Brandy Love. And I was just listening to the young man. I wanted to know what type of social-emotional barriers have you experienced throughout your IEP journey? Because I know my son just turned 14, and he's having a lot of anxiety about entering.
Like entering what, if you don't mind me asking? Like entering high school or middle school?
He has an IEP. He's 14. He'll be a freshman in high school, and he's having a lot of anxiety about being social because they're going back in-person learning in August.
Okay, gotcha. Only thing, like, I was a little bit nervous as well. Like, I was in the same boat as him. But, like, when I was in extracurricular activities, you know, that made me more open and more comfortable of who I surrounded with myself. Like I was talking about myself in the beginning, it's like I started doing theater tech since I was in elementary school, and that made me, like, get closer to the teachers and comfortable with the teachers and trust the teachers and everything. And when I worked with those teachers in those extracurricular activities, that pretty much, like, get me in the avenue of, like, if I'm in the same classroom as that teacher that I'm in the same extracurricular activities, that made me feel, like, more of a bond with the teacher to the point that, like, I'm not saying that to be a teacher's pet, but, like, you will feel more comfortable of you. It's a familiar face that you see daily because, think about it, like, the kid sees the teachers at least, what, a good 80% of the day, and the other 20% sadly is the parents. But other than that, like, when I was in extracurricular activities, like, I felt comfortable with the teachers because they're teaching me new things I've never got taught before. And also, I see them more than any other day. So especially if they see my work ethic of what I'm doing in the extracurricular activities, they will trust me to the point that when I'm in the classrooms, they know my work ethic with that and in the classroom. So they combine that both, saying, this student is really well. I trust this student, and if he needs any help, I will help him out if need be.
Now, Brandy, do you have your son involved in any extracurricular activities?
No, I'm looking into that as the world is opening back up. But, yeah, the remote learning was extremely hard. I had to have emergency IEP meetings every month to augment his IEP so that he could be able to get up and move around and go outside. They omitted the second and fifth period because they was finding that it's just too much screen time. And so I actually had emailed the Illinois School Board to try to see if we can get
those hours reduced for special needs kids, but I never received a response.
Okay, so again,
well,
a parent who I applaud, because without her intervention, they would not have done it. That probate would have been just so sad, too bad.
I know Rhonda has a lot of interaction with her students. I mean, they call each other, email each other. She has a great rapport with her students. And I think that's something that has to happen. I mean, she's always looking at ways to embrace and encourage them, you know. But like Xavier says, he needs to be into some extra curriculum. He needs to be doing something, which means you have to get involved with him too.
Well, see, the thing is that he's going to start back school in August, so he's going to be a freshman. So everything about that building is new to him and all his ninth graders. I mean, all of the ninth graders. The challenge he's going to have is every ninth grader is have that emotional discomfort. The challenge that the average student with an IEP experiences is that it's heightened. Your guest had mentioned that a couple of times, because what happens is, you know, you get that palpitation, and it's going to happen for every ninth grader. But for her child, it's going to be faster. So what they have to do is to make sure that he understands that there's nothing wrong with the anxiety, that's normal, and it's going to take place, and it's also going to fall in place. But when
I get anxiety every time I have to check in on the set, for real, because I got to have this green check mark, then I worry about getting my hair done, and I worry about if I had the right clothes for, you know, anxiety. It's not just the students, it's for everybody, but we're talking about special. Well,
I know,
I'm
we
special.
Right, because that's a perfect example,
Maureen,
because it's such a natural thing. But then for that student, it's heightened. The difference is you can rationalize that this too shall pass. Her child and your guest, they didn't have that rational ability at a young
age.
That's the difference.
You're right.
Because, of course, it happens, and it's normal. And her child, what she's trying to get her child through the threshold, because he's not going to have that second voice to tell him, take a deep breath, this too shall pass. The concern and the issue is, how does he react when he finds himself stressed? Ask your guest, how does he react?
Okay, Brandy, hold on. Stay on, Brandy. Xavier, the question Rhonda B. Woods is asking, what did you experience through your pressure points if you could remember that far back?
In high school and middle school and all through, just in general?
I guess basically we want to relate it to high school, since Brandy's son is
going
to high school. And like Monica said, it's a new building, it's a new surrounding.
So when I was in, when I started freshman year, you know, like, yeah, I had that anxiety. I was a little nervous, and I learned a lot in the summer, you know, like I was still like getting myself mentally ready for it, for high school, because it was a new playing field. It was a new mindset, you know, like thing with me with sports, but it was just like brand new for me. I was nervous. I didn't know if I would fit in. And yeah, like it's a natural instinct to be nervous and a natural instinct to be having that high anxiety. But I use those natural instincts of anxiety and nervousness as excitement and motivating, because I'm like, hey, this is a new playing field. Just show you that you own the spot and don't let anybody take you apart, because even though you have a disability or have an IEP, you're going to be different like anyone else, but use that difference as a motivator, because you will be able to strive. You will work harder than the other students before. And they think they, like the other people think they know better and everything like that. Just use Like, just focus on yourself, and if you focus on yourself in the long run, the right people will come towards you in your aid when you need it. So when you're down, don't stay down. Get back up, or if you feel like you're still down and about, there's someone always, especially the teachers, have their hand out to help you out. Because as a freshman, there's always teachers to help you out. You're not going to be alone. You're never alone. Even your parents, you know, your parents are going to be there when you're down. So, like, when you get done with school, your parents always say, so how was your first day? Let the kid tell you how it was. Sit down with them, tell them how it was, let them tell you how it was. And if he enjoyed it, praise him. Because if you give him more encouragement and praise him, that will make him more look forward to the next day and work harder, and also, like, saying, hey, I felt great the next day. And after that, just, like, keep on asking him for the continuous week. So when that's 1 week is done, he can always look back at it saying, last week I did this. Let me go ahead and do it the same way next week and do it much better. And from that point on, he could have that repetitive mindset and have more confidence in himself instead of being nervous. And that's what I'm saying, like, use the nervousness as excitement and push his limits and push out of himself, out of the shell.
Now, one thing I did for a couple of my students, I gave them journals. I bought them nice journals, and I would let them journal, write, you know, whatever they felt like writing in that journal and give it to me. And I would read the journal, and it was just between me and that student. Unless something in that journal posed a threat, then I was mandatory by the state, turned it over to the principal. I never corrected anything that they had written in there. If they had misspelled words or they drew pictures, because they need something to express themselves. Because I had two students from Jalisco, and they spoke no English. And so, but all they knew were pancakes and tamales. But when they were just as nervous, because here they're coming to the Estados Unidos, United States, into a classroom fresh, you know, but the journals really help. So I would suggest even giving your son a journal, not a diary, a little journal, like a little book, a hardback book for him to write his thoughts down every day. Put the date on it, because you'd be surprised how that expresses.
Maureen, can you ask her, how does her son, what does he do when he gets stressed out or nervous? What does he currently do?
Right, so that's why I wanted to sneak this question in before I had to leave. I wanted to tell Maureen, because I know herself and I are in the entertainment field, but I'm trying to get him to be more independent as I start to get booked on different projects. So how can I get him to have more faith in himself, because he's really, really dependent on me, and I'm trying to get him to – journal.
Get him a journal.
But Maureen, still answer the question today. How does he react when he feels stressed or there's a problem? How does he react at this point in his life?
So now I've got him to stop having the violent meltdowns that he used to have when he was fifth, sixth, and seventh grade. So now he doesn't pick up things and break them anymore. He's able to verbalize, like, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I need to go have a walk. I need to take a break. So that is improvement. I think as he's getting older, he's learning how to normalize some of those behaviors.
Okay, so that's what I was getting at. That's exactly what I was thinking was going to be a response. So, now this is for, like I say, the IEPs are individualized, and this is so crucial to me. Now, I'm not talking about nothing general. I'm talking about each individual person they learn. Now, your child, because he has a tendency to act out, then you want to make sure when he's entered into a new school and a new environment that that is what they understand. Because if he gets in there and they label him as being a behavior problem, there's a stimulus to being a behavior problem. The kids are stimulated. Because there's a group of kids, listen to me, this is important when it's your child. There's a group of kids who's going to gravitate to him, the quote-unquote problem child. To him, he's only reacting because he doesn't have control of his emotions. But to them, he's bold in doing what they want to do. So they encourage him. And so when they encourage him, then, of course, now he's found a comfort zone because now he has a group of peers. And then the school, depending on the teacher, if they don't read that and pay attention to that, they label him as a bad kid. And then he feeds into that because he gets gratification from his peers. Yeah. So that's why.
Xavier, were you a problem in school? Did you exhibit violent behavior, or were you just cool and calm like you are now?
I was a teacher's pet. You know, like, I enjoyed school, you know. Like, I pretty much, like, what kept me grounded, like, I was never violent. Like, I was never to the extreme of, like, if I don't get what I want, I'll throw a fit. I was always a calm, collected person because how my parents told me is, like, if you don't get it, don't beat yourself up. Always go to someone that's higher than you to help you out. And if I did get violent, which is rare, I go ahead and, like, what her son was doing, step out, take a breather, and calm yourself. Because that will help them clear their head and be like, hey, it's not a big deal. Everybody makes mistakes. Just go back at it.
Okay, I have a question.
This is the important part. He has to put the school on notice for that, because otherwise those adults in that building is going to label him as a behavior problem.
You got to jump on that right away because it's one thing to have a disability, but it's also another thing to be labeled as a problem like that, because it will look bad on not only just the kid, but also it looks bad around who he surrounds himself with or who he is, like, the parent and everything like that. Like, I know you're a wonderful parent. I'm not knocking you, so don't think that. Just know that, like, half the teachers and the principal and everything like that be like, hey, this is my kid's issue. I want you to be really close attention to him. Like, help him out to let him know that, hey, your mom's not here, but I'm going to be here to help you out throughout the long run, throughout high school, if you need anything. That's why my counselor and I, we still talk to this day. Even my special ed teachers in the past, I still talk to Ms. Smith. I still talk to Ms. Belay, Ms. Till, I still talk to all of them, and I still remember their names and everything like that. And when I am down and about and everything like that, and I had a wear-out day, or if I felt like I should have done something better than I did originally, I go back to the notes that they gave me when I graduated middle school and high school, and I reread it to the point that, like, I know that everything's going to be okay. And I go back to the next day, know what I read, and always reflect it to my actions to the future, and that's how I keep myself calm, collective. If anything, like what Marie was saying, if you want to do this, like, for the journal, let him, like, write a calming letter for him in the back of the journal so he could read it, and so he could be like, my mom is here, even though she's not here.
Exactly.
So it would be, like, something to give him higher spirit and also higher mindset so he doesn't be overwhelmed or overstressed, and he could believe in himself.
Is that something she thinks or work for? I cannot stress this enough about each child being individualized. Is that something she thinks or work for her child? Because if she
like any child could do that.
Now,
Brandy, will that work? Do you think that will work for you?
For your son.
To be able to read. Okay, he's not going to stop and read a letter that I wrote for him in the back of a journal when he's feeling anxiety. That's why I've already spoken with the special needs director. Morton West has a whole nother wing in a school that they built just for special needs children so that they don't have to be overwhelmed and get, you know, and interact with some of the other people. So that's good. It's a more contained space. And he's going to have increased social hours. So I'm very confident in the school, very confident. But then also, too, I wanted to ask you ladies, with all the civil unrest and everything that's going on with African-American males, he was experiencing some of anxiety about that with the police in terms of people power. How do I get them prepared for that?
You know, the thing is, if you're comfortable and if the staff in the school is cognizant of his individual, all that part will be okay because they address all of that.
Okay.
Yeah. They're just the schools. Yeah, they address all. You know, they know that too. Especially, you know, an inner city school, they know because that affects all of our kids, gen ed, special ed, any ed.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They cover that throughout the school year. The only thing with him, with your child in particular, is but you've already discussed with the school, which is the first step, which is what I would want to get out there. You've already discussed that with them. You just don't want him to go in the door being labeled one way, and then that's it.
Okay.
Like the gentleman that's on the line, he could go to any school and he would have been okay, because as adults, and they don't mean no harm, but as adults, they like the kids who are nice and who's past them. My challenge, my conversation, my reason for speaking out are the kids who's not like the young man on this phone.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. The one, yeah, because every kid reacts differently.
I have a question here from Sharon, who just sent a text message in from Chicago. She wants to know, what is the difference between an IEP and a 504? And also, what school was Xavier educated? Was he educated in Chicago or someplace else? So she sent two questions. Thank you, Brandy. Just hold on.
Okay.
So do you want us to answer first?
Yeah. When you can say what you answered, I'll say about the 504. I'll explain that.
Mm-hmm.
The 504 is more medical.
Okay.
The 504 is more medical. It has nothing to do with academic ability. You know, like a person has asthma. Or if they have ADHD, you know, everything else is okay, but they have some type of medical condition, then they'll usually have a 504.
But is that 504 part of an IEP plan or no? Because seemed like to me she said her child has a 504. So Sharon, if you can text me back and let us know if your child has a medical condition or.
Maureen, the answer to the question is yes. The 504 comes under the IEP plan because it's still an individual plan that has to be put in place for that individual. But the reason why it's specified as a 504 is usually medical. But it is still considered an IEP. It comes under the IEP. You know?
Okay.
But they may not even have any academic accommodations. It could be something like we have kids at school who have sickle cell anemia. They have a 504 plan because the educators have to understand that after they eat, they'll get sleepy and drowsy so that they'll know not to punish the kid or penalize the kid. You know, there's different, you know. So it's medical. So you have asthma. So then the teachers, you know, they'll put it in the IEP plan so that they'll know that this kid always has their pump with them. Or, you know, somebody will be diabetic. And so in their IEP plan, it'll say, you know, make sure they get orange juice or whatever is specific about their medical condition. But it comes under the IEP plan.
And Xavier, she wants to know if you were educated in Chicago, because Ms. Wood said everything that you have gotten was great. And now we're hearing that some parents are not getting everything. Their students are not getting that. So were you educated in Chicago, in the Chicago public school system?
I was educated I live in Mount Prospect, and that's where I was educated, in the suburbs. I live in Mount Prospect. Elementary school, I went to Indian Grove. I still talk to those teachers to this day. My very first teacher was Miss Shaken, but I believe she changed her last name. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that.
but I can tell you right now,
my
before
kindergarten.
He's finished.
Yeah.
Listen, you guys, before he's finished, there is a huge difference between Mount Prospect and anything that's majority black.
Come on, you better say that. That's what I was about to say, too. You know that.
Yeah, no.
We're talking about apples and pears.
Yeah, we're talking about apples, pears, and, you know, you got grapes and I got a cantaloupe. There's no comparison.
Yeah, so you probably had 5 to 10 students in your classroom, whereas
in my special ed class,
in any of those classrooms in Mount Prospect. It's a whole
that part. Now let me tell you this: there's nothing wrong with the special ed department in CPS. That is not the issue. The issue and the reason why I want to be on your show, because there's nothing wrong with it. Like I say, for 85% of the kids, it works. My concern and my message and my method of what I'd be harassing you about are not this gentleman on this phone. First of all, he was in a good school that had the finance and the resources. Second of all, he had the personality where he went along to get along, any of those kids. I'm talking about that kid who resists the system. I'm talking about that kid who doesn't understand he has a disability or whose parent didn't get it identified early enough in his life. And then they get labeled. Or even a kid like this young lady who was just on here, where she understands her kid has challenges. He has the support in place, but then he'll still get labeled. I'm talking about those kids. Mm-hmm. My biggest concern is a kid who looks, acts, and seems normal, but he still has an underlying problem. But because everything on the surface seems normal, then they push him through as a behavior problem. And the parent does not get in that school and advocate for that kid to get the support.
But when because I was in elementary school, like for me, in elementary school, when I was in the classroom, like I was like pretty much the only black person. And my parents, especially my mom, she fought for me to get this education, like how, like to stay in the class. And also, like if I stayed in the class, it was like a good amount of time. But at the same time, like I was, like I said, the only black person in the classroom. Like I felt like, even though, like I would say there was at least good 20 to 30, not like 20 to 25 students in the classroom. And like I said, like with me being the only black person, minus being having the disability, I felt different. But at the same time, I surrounded myself with the teachers and felt comfortable with the teachers, that they helped me out. He's saying, hey, maybe you may have, like, they didn't look at me by my skin color because I was the same, like, by having the disability because I have the same skin, different skin tone. They just looked at me as a person, and that's what I gravitate, like, I appreciated them to this day for it. Because, and same with middle school and elementary school, I mean, middle school and high school, like, in my class of 2012, and when I graduated high school, I would say there was at least a good, give or take, like, I would say 10 black people, I'm not sure. Yeah, there was Indian, yeah, there was other ethnicities here and there, but, like, I was used to it ever since I was in elementary school. You know,
right,
like, I didn't let it faze me whatsoever.
This is not a race issue. It's not a black or white issue.
I know. I'm just letting you know that.
This is a suburban dollars versus a city dollars. I don't care if you're green.
Yeah.
If you're in the suburbs, you're going to get a different set of treatment. Your comparison is not going to be the same to someone in the city, period. You're not going to have the same mindset
that.
Of teachers. You're not going to have the same tolerance of teachers. In this, in a larger setting, they try to push the child through. It's easier to push a behavior problem in than it is to give that kid their individual protections under the educational law. So
Brandy,
not talking
love.
About this, not,
Brandy, is your son being educated in the Chicago school system or the suburban school system?
Oh, that's what I wanted to speak about. When he was younger, we were in Forest Park, Illinois, and I thought that was going to be a good situation. It turned out to be an extremely bad situation. I had to get a special needs attorney to outsource him to Giant Steps, which was $14,000 a year. But they continued to call me and threatened to call DCFS on me when I wouldn't stop what I was doing to come pick him up. I said, well, if you don't have the means and the staff to be able to handle him, you need to go ahead and sign off on the papers to get him exported. So I had to do a due process with the attorneys, and that's the only way they ever did it. Suburbs doesn't mean an end-all either, because he was being labeled as behavior problems. I was getting into it with teachers. They was like, you need to tell your son to stop kicking me when he's having outbursts. No, you need to tell the special needs director to get him out of this school.
So now, see, this is who I'm trying to address. Right. See, this is my purpose. This is what I talk to her about all this. This is what I talk to Maureen about all the time. That's my point. Once that child gets labeled as a behavior problem, that's how the system, I don't care where you're at. That's why I just told the young man, it's not a black and white issue. The system tries to just push them through as a behavior problem. And then the parent has to be the advocate. And Brandy, I applaud you from here to Chinatown and then to China. Because that's the problem. Parents do not go in there and advocate their kids. They accept
Rhonda,
the labor of their
it wasn't easy. I had to give up my whole acting career for at least 10 years dealing with this.
Not easy. But see, but the thing is, it's not easy, but it's necessary for your child's adulthood. So, it's not easy. But see, but what parents need to understand is that IEP is a federal protection.
Yeah.
And you need to know your rights, like you had to do due process right, because the federal law says that that kid needs to get whatever he needs to get during his learning years, and that's from age 3 or 4 years old, depending on the state you're in, up to age 22. The system, the educational system is supposed to provide it. But see, but when they label your kid as a behavior problem, then they're taking him out of his protective class. And that's what happens in our black community. Then the first thing they do is start calling DCFS and label the parents being neglectful.
Exactly.
Because they remove their child from the this is important. Because they remove their child from the protective class. Because in a protective class, there's no law to protect them but the federal law. And that an IEP is a federal protection. So not a kid who went through and got along with the teacher. That's not the purpose of me being online. Because they did what's right for him. I'm talking about those kids who are in these schools who's being labeled as a behavior problem, and the parent do not understand their rights and keep trying to tell their kid to behave. If it was that simple, the kid wouldn't be misbehaving.
I have a question from David. David has a son. I'm a single parent, and my son is a special need. So I don't know. He has an IEP, and he's on medication. So he has an IEP and a 504. But it has gotten to the point where I want to remove my son off of the medication, because when he's not on the medication, he's pleasant. When he's on the medication, he's hard to deal with.
Okay, so that's between him and the medical profession. The school don't have anything to do with that. Him and whoever his medical team is.
No, their school does have something to do with it, because that was another thing they were saying. They were trying to the superintendent had called me into the office and was like, why isn't your son on medication? I said, that's not your – you're not allowed to tell me that. What you should do is take him out of the school. So they were trying to bully me into putting him on medication. Well, that's what I'm saying. If I was a very meek woman who didn't know everybody doesn't know that, can't do that. But there was a white superintendent, I'm black, and he's trying to bully me. No, sweetheart, I know the law. And his face dropped.
Listen, I was in Hinsdale, and they kept trying to put those kids on Ritalin. See, this is not a black and white thing. This is about knowing your rights, and it's a federal thing. Because they kept trying to put those kids on Ritalin. No, that parent don't want that child on that medication. You take that up with your medical profession. The school, that's just an opinion. Okay, we all have opinions. But parents have to know their rights to keep the school in check, that superintendent in check. He's not a medical professional, so therefore he's out of his lane to have even suggested that to you.
We're going to have to do another show on this, because our time is coming to the end. Brandy, I want to thank you for calling in and getting us really stirred up. Xavier, you still with us?
I'm still here.
I want to thank you, and I want you to tell our listeners, because people are just tuning in. They're online. The show is archived, so you can always go back and listen to it over and over again. But give some people how they can get in touch with you, like Brandy. You know, Brandy's one of the actresses, too. Rhonda is an actress also. But tell people how they can get in touch with you if they wanted to have further conversation. I follow you on social media. on Facebook. But
so on social media, I got you. So on social media, so on Facebook is Xavier. You got to make sure you spell it right. Thanks for my parents for this. So it's spelled EXZAVIOR Hargrove. So once again, that's EXZ as in zebra, AV as in Victor, IOR Hargrove is spelled HARGROVE. But if you want to message me on follow me on Instagram or wherever, it will be XEX underscore Scooby, which is spelled SCOOB underscore 810.
Okay.
XEX underscore Scooby, SCOOB. Y underscore 810.
Okay, so I mean, I
ain't nobody got none of that.
It's on here. And Rhonda B, tell us what we can do. I mean, this is a show that needs to be done again as we get close to the school's opening, because parents need to know their rights. They need to know if they're not happy with that person that's advocating for the child, that they have a right to change, to switch up. Am I correct?
Well, see, Brandy is actually, she's the expert because she's a parent who's been through it. And what she said about it was, her key point, what parents have to understand, is there was nothing easy about it. Because it's like, what is that when you, like you fighting Goliath. You a little bitty old ant fighting this big giant. They get to bully you. They get to threaten you. And so what happens in the average black household, if you have any weakness, if this is any minority, but if you have any weakness in your personal life, then you more likely be bullied by the school system because you don't want them sending any other authorities investigating your personal life. And so therefore they're taking and trying to punk you. You know, they're taking and trying to punk you. And like in her case, she had to put her career on hold because they turned her advocating for her child into a full-time job. And so parents have to understand, though, you have to go toe-to-toe for your child because your child needs this academic support while they're a kid because they have to pay for it the rest of their life as an adult.
And we've come to the end of the show. I'm telling you, I want to thank all of you that called in, that tuned in, that chatted in, that are online. I want to thank my guests, Xavier Hargrove and Rhonda B. Woods, and my calling guest, Brandy. I want to thank you. Learning differently is not a disability. Those are words from Rhonda B. Woods. And she has so many little quaint little things.
Learning differently do not make you learning disabled.
And then be the best that we can be. Until next week, stay focused
and
be
thank
blessed.
Thank you, Madam Forte. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you. Okay,
we'll
nice hair for you, young man.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Stay focused.